On a regular basis, we have sat down for years, listed all the products and services we offer, and we ask three questions. What needs a facelift? What needs an overhaul? And what needs a funeral?
Oh, I love it.
Yeah. So the facelift is, that's a great idea. We just need to make it look like 2025 or 2026 rather than 2015. The overhaul is bigger. That program was great back in the day when we started it 25 years ago. We need to still meet that same need, but we need to overhaul the way we do it. The funeral is the hardest one. In fact, when we do this at Growing Leaders, sometimes I have to leave the room because they're about to cut one of the books I wrote. And I go, I can't let my baby go. But it's a great exercise every year. And it keeps us updated and upgraded along the way. So we're not getting stuck in a defect that we just let go on because we got familiar with.
Welcome. What if the next generation of leaders is not the problem, but rather the solution? You know, many of us have jumped on the bandwagon of bashing the younger generations of workers. We've labeled them en masse as being lazy or entitled. But as you've heard me speak about many times, information without context, it's propaganda. Here's what I mean. The world is in what many have described as a meta crisis. There's a global rise on the far right. There's global population decline, there's climate change, there's collapsing trust in institutions and the education system. And I haven't even mentioned the real possibility that AI is not only going to take all our jobs, but it's going to leave the younger generation floating meaningless. But what if that next generation is not the problem? In fact, what if their disruption is the solution? Well, to answer that question is our upcoming guest, Dr. Tim Elmore. He's the founder of Growing Leaders, and he says, the future begins with Gen Z, that they are here to disrupt the workplace. And according to Tim, and in the words of Martha Stewart, that's a good thing. Welcome to the Dov Barron Show. Come for the stories, stay for the learning. I'm your host, Dov Barron. I advise high-performing leaders and organizations how to harness their emotional source code to transform their tribe. Our guest today is Dr. Tim Elmore. He's the founder of Growing Leaders, which is an Atlanta-based nonprofit organization created to develop emerging leaders. His work has grown out of 20 years of serving alongside famed servant leader John Maxwell. Tim Elmore has appeared in the Wall Street Journal, the Washington Post, USA Today, Psychology Today, and he's been featured on CNN Headline News, Fox Business, and many other major outlets to talk about leading multiple generations in the marketplace. He's written, wait for it, over 35 books, including The 8 Paradoxes of Great Leadership and A New Kind of Diversity, Making Different Generations on Your Team a Competitive Advantage. His latest book, The Future Begins with Z, 9 Strategies for Leading Generation Z as They Upset the Workplace. More on that in a moment. You're tuned into The Dov Barron Show. Each episode is an exploration into the minds of those who are shaping the world. Every episode is a raw, unscripted collaboration between my guest and me as we dive into discovering the truths few dare to reveal. We find for you guests who are sometimes unknown to the general public, but absolute titans in their field. If you're the kind of leader who really craves depth over sound bites, hit that subscribe button right now, because this is where real thinkers come to sharpen their edge. Please turn up the volume and help me to welcome one of the most prolific leadership authors, a gentleman and a scholar and returning champion, Tim Elmore. Welcome, sir.
Thank you, Dov. Always good to be with you. We're going to have an invigorating conversation, I'm sure.
I'm looking forward to it, mate. I always enjoy our conversations, even when they're not being recorded. We've had many conversations that are really important. This whole thing around Gen Z, this sort of generalization about generations, we've talked about millennials in the past as well.
Yeah.
From your research, before we even go any further, what is shown to be sort of the myths or misconceptions about Gen Z?
Yeah, well, there are a bunch of them. And I've been guilty myself of buying it. You hear a story or you meet somebody that's 22 and you go, ah, they're all like that. I do have a chapter, an entire chapter on the myths that I try to bust. One of them is that Gen Z really doesn't want to work. They leave right at 5 as soon as they can and they're darting out the door. And of course, their supervisor thinks they don't like work or they don't want to work. So Dov, I ended up having, 13 focus groups. So that was my qualitative research. And then I did quantitative research with over 2,000 individuals. I discovered they do want to work, but they want to work at something they care about. So Mr. Manager or Mrs. Manager, you're going to need to help them know the why, not just the what. But listen to one of my conversations from a focus group. I talked to a young lady in LA, and I told her that I think I hear bosses saying you really don't want to work. You leave right at 5. She smiled at me and said, Dr. Elmore, can I tell you why I leave right at 5? I said, sure. She goes, well, as soon as 5 rolls around, I dart off to another job. I don't make enough to pay the bills here, so I need to do another job. And then when that one's done, I dart off to help my mother who has stage 4 cancer. So she smiled again as if to say, don't talk to me about work ethic. I may work harder than my boss does. But that was good for me just to hear it may not be what I suspect. Isn't it true? All behavior has a reason. Context explains conduct. So there were several myths that I thought, oh, this is good for me. I learned as I wrote. It was great.
As you said, I know there's a chapter on these myths, and it's an important chapter because I think it's very easy to generalize about things. People generalize about people who voted for Donald Trump and they go, oh, well, they're all this. Or people who voted for Kamala and they go, oh, they're all this. Yeah, that's not true. Or people who are under a certain age are this, or over a certain age are that.
Right.
Any of those generalizations, as I said, that's propaganda because there's context that is entirely human and subjective. And because of that context, then I have to push the other way and say, well, was she an anomaly? The girl you spoke to working 2 jobs and looking after a parent with cancer. Not everybody in Gen Z is that. So where do we go with that?
Yeah. Well, I think part of it is I need to learn to listen. So I may see someone that doesn't look like they want to work, and I may find they really don't want to work at all. That's true. And there are some. In fact, one of the learning points I learned was Generation Z sees shortcuts as the new work ethic. Now, that makes the hair on the back of my neck stand up straight. But what they meant by that is we work smarter, not harder. If we know how to get on a smartphone or use AI and get the job done in 5 hours, not 8 hours, does that really matter? Is it the result what you want? Well, yes, it is for me. So I may have to change the way I approach, the way I lead them. And I may have to be open to listen before I draw a conclusion about these young people.
I think that's a very fair comment. Now, in the book, you open the book by talking about the Peter Pan paradox. And I think that's an important part for us to start. Tell us what that is and why it matters when leading Gen Z.
Yeah, this was the big meta discovery I made that I feel like sets this book apart a little bit. Most of your listeners, I'm sure, know the story of Peter Pan. It was a book and then a stage play, and then Disney created this animated film. Peter Pan was this winsome character that would fly into London, spread pixie dust everywhere, and in a magical sort of way, he did things that nobody else could do. The other side of the same coin, of course, was he wanted to stay in Neverland, where kids don't ever have to grow up.
Right.
Now, this is overspeak, but what the Peter Pan paradox is Gen Z has something going on that's both magic and tragic. So the age of authority is decreasing, Dov, meaning they're coming in smart as a whip on certain categories. They've looked things up. They've looked things over. They understand smart technology. I think they have an intuition on where culture's going. They understand tomorrow's consumer intuitively. But at the same time, while the age of authority is going down, the age of maturity seems to be going up. I've lost count of the number of supervisors that have said 26 is the new 18. And that's not an insult. It's just socially and emotionally, maybe because they spent so much time on the screens, they're not coming in, maybe looking you in the eye, shaking your hand the way we used to do, and interacting in that way. So my big quick takeaway on both of these realities is this. I'm going to have to listen more than I used to listen, and I may have to coach more than I used to coach.
You know, it's a very interesting thing that you brought up there in this paradox, because when you talk about maturity, Now a lot of my work is around maturity, but it's not necessarily with Gen Z.
Yeah, right.
So I'm dealing with baby boomers and Gen Xers and talking about the lack of emotional maturity.
Yeah.
Many of them are highly intellectual.
Yes.
And highly educated about emotional intelligence, but they have not embodied it, which is the maturity. And so if you're a leader leading Gen Z and you don't have the emotional maturity to get past your own biases, then you're immature to immature. And that's going to be a massive, massive problem leading forward, because your maturity has got nothing to do with your chronology. It's got everything to do with your embodiment of that. And so I get what you're saying about having to listen more, but what ears are you listening with? That's an important thing. Are you listening through your own biases for justification and validation of your own biases, or are you actually listening to how it's different for them than it is for you? Now, on another piece of that, I want to bring up something to you because I think it really addresses this issue. You and I talked about this way back because we had our very first conversation. I think it was like right at the beginning of COVID.
Yeah.
And I wrote a lot of stuff about how COVID, there was going to be an epidemic and it's not going to do with the actual virus, that there's going to be an epidemic that's going to be a social epidemic. It's going to be a problem.
Yeah.
And so when people were locked in their homes, now, if you look at Gen Z, how old is the youngest Gen Z today?
Youngest Gen Z would be perhaps middle school, late middle school.
Right.
And then all the way up to young professional. Yeah.
So young professional, right? That young professional lost a minimum of 2 years of their life and their maturity, social maturity of interacting with others.
Yeah.
And in that time got hooked online, which pushed them back even further.
Mm-hmm.
So we've got all kinds of problems. And on top of that, we, other generations, also lost that social interaction. So we're all a bit clumsy in this now. And I think that's another context that we've got to add to this, because a lot of owners and CEOs are trying to get people to come back to work and they don't understand. My new book is called Creating Cultures of Belonging, because if we don't have a culture of belonging, why would people come back? They don't want to. They're like, I'm okay at home. So you've got to be something else to come for. And I think that particularly with that Gen Z, we've got to find out what is it they want. Like you talked about, finding out what it is that they want and how do we provide that? Not in bloody foosball machines and cappuccino machines. What is it that they want? What have you found out that they want that we're not seeing, Tim?
Yeah. Well, first of all, I love what you've written about a culture of belonging.
Thank you.
I've soaked up every word. This is one of the top things that I heard in the focus groups. They do want a culture of belonging. However they worded it, they want to experience community. They want to feel like they're working with friends, not just colleagues at work. And of course, you and I might go, are you serious? Yeah, they are. They really are. So they want to feel like they belong, and it may be the only place they get that feeling.
Exactly.
Gen Z is coming in as the loneliest generation on record. Now, all generations are coming in lonely today, boomers, Xers, millennials, and Gen Z, but Gen Z would be coming in the loneliest. So that would be one. The second thing is they really want to have a voice from day one. I want you to be able to hear me. And I want to be heard. That was the big cry. I feel like if we can create context where we're listening, not just telling. So let me tell you a story on that one.
Please.
You might remember early in the book, I talk about Colin Webb. I met him when he was in high school and he was a sharp young high school kid. In fact, so smart that he got an invitation to go to MIT. So he went to MIT, did well academically, served on student government. So you can imagine, Dolph, when he got done, he had several job offers. He decided to go to Detroit and work for one of the big three, General Motors. So as he shows up at General Motors, they put him in the smart car division. And I want you to know, Colin is a very respectful young 20-something, very cordial. His EQ is as high as his IQ. But as he looked around, he saw this company that was pretty old school in the way they did things, very traditional. And so he started getting ideas on how they could improve. Now, remember, he was just 22 at the time. So he starts writing down these ideas. He ended up taking them to his supervisor and said, I think we can improve professional development here. I think we can improve that system and this process here. And after he finished his three or four ideas, he got nothing in return. In fact, his supervisor said, hey, buddy, just keep your head down, keep your nose to the grindstone, just do your work. Well, Colin, I'm sure, said, yes, sir, but he knew these ideas were good. So get this, Colin writes the CEO of General Motors. He sends an email to Mary Barra and says, I've got these ideas. Well, extraordinarily, Mary writes back and says, these are really good ideas. I'll take these to my executive team. So she sits down with her exec team and they go through these three or four ideas. They all agreed, these are really good ideas. This would improve us. However, by the time those ideas made their way down the org chart, as you can imagine, they ended up dying on the vine. In fact, when it got down to the supervisor of Colin, he said, I told you, just keep your nose to the grindstone. In fact, Dov, he said, you have to be around here 8 years before you can lead anything. So Colin didn't last very long there. You can imagine, it was so unmotivating. He left within a year, has since then become a serial entrepreneur. He started three companies, sold one of them. He's doing quite well now. But I can't help but think that GM might have missed out on a great opportunity because they weren't willing to listen as well as talk.
But isn't that the problem? The need to evolve, or companies feel they need to hang on to what's old and familiar.
Yeah.
Like every company knows intellectually, we must evolve and we must move with the times.
Yeah.
And obviously, a young person is going to see things differently than us, and we should listen to that. We get that. But at the same time, this idea, this rigidity of it has to stay the same. So when you're consulting, guiding these leaders,
yes,
about this Gen Z, how do you break that middle section? Because you said he got to the CEO, they went, yes, this is brilliant, fantastic, we should do this. But the dilution of it and the destruction of it happens in the middle. What do you say to those leaders?
Well, I generally begin to talk about the normalization of defects. I think you're right. We love the familiar. We love the comfortable. So we continue to do things the way we've always done them, even if we're losing market share or we're losing customers or whatever. And I think we need to include Gen Z on in some of the meetings. We would have Gen Zers come into some of our leadership meetings just to listen, but we then ask them to weigh in. So the normalization of defects, many people would know this term, it's a corporate term, where we need to list the way we do things now and say, did we start that 3 or 4 years ago because we had to find a quick solution, but it wasn't really the best solution to doing invoicing or whatever? And we let people, including the 20-somethings, weigh in on what we do. So here's an exercise, Dov, that we do that might be a good steal for a listener right now.
Fabulous. Thank you.
On a regular basis, we have sat down for years, listed all the products and services we offer, and we asked three questions. What needs a facelift? What needs an overhaul? And what needs a funeral?
Oh, I love it.
Yeah. So the facelift is, that's a great idea. We just need to make it look like 2025 or 2026 rather than 2015. The overhaul is bigger. That program was great back in the day when we started it 25 years ago. We need to still meet that same need, but we need to overhaul the way we do it. The funeral is the hardest one. In fact, when we do this at Growing Leaders, sometimes I have to leave the room because they're about to cut one of the books I wrote. And I go, I can't let my baby go. But it's a great exercise every year. And it keeps us updated and upgraded along the way. So we're not getting stuck in a defect that we just let go on because we got familiar with it.
But you just said something that I think is profoundly important there. You have to leave the room.
Yeah.
Leaders won't leave the room generally. This is where my pushback is with you, Tim.
Yes.
I agree with everything you're saying. And at the same time, the leaders still have the control. They still have the power. And so they go, yeah, you know what? That's a great idea. But it's my book that we're running here. So I'm sorry. We'll consider that later. Or I'm not going to change because I'm going to be gone in 5 years.
Yeah.
And I'm keeping things the way that's easy and recommended for me because I'm just going to wait out my 5 years before I get my ticket.
Yeah,
I can imagine, because I know, because you and I are both more younger at heart than maybe people who are of our age.
Yeah,
I can imagine the amount of fierce hanging on to,
yes,
you know, I'm not letting go of my way. I can't imagine the frustration of being those younger people. And I think you're right. They're going to walk away.
Yeah. Well, you know what I often do, Dov? You're really making my mind work here. There was a day we were the young whippersnappers coming in, you know, 1970s and whatever. There are so many stories when the boomers or the Xers were coming in. We had ideas and sometimes they listened to us, sometimes they didn't. But it was always an economic thing. Eventually, a company dies. Ask Blockbuster, ask Kodak. So in 1975, a 25-year-old young man named Steve Sasson joined up at Kodak. And he, as a 25-year-old young professional, 3 years out of college, came up with a first digital camera. He took it to the leaders at Kodak and they go, that's going to cannibalize all the film and all the cameras we're making right now. So they never let it see the light of day. They killed themselves.
They put it on display.
Yes, yes.
At Kodak, they put that digital camera on display while ignoring it. That for me was like,
yes.
It's like, here's how we're going to die. We're just going to put this in the center of the hall.
So we need to keep telling those stories to remind people like us who are older and maybe wiser in some ways, even if you just care about the revenue or the continuation of your great company that you're stewarding right now, you need to be listening, because the ideas that are new are probably going to come from the young most of the time.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. So let's talk about AI for a minute, because
yeah,
I think it's probably a very big issue, certainly if I'm in Gen Z, because what we now know from the latest research, there's been a lot of new research come out even in the last couple of months, and it says that if you have a lot of experience, you've done more than 5 years in something, you've built up a level of experience slash wisdom, and AI doesn't really know how to do that right now. So for now, at least, your job is safe.
Yeah.
However, the first 5 years of the work, meaning if you're just leaving college or school and you're going into a job, AI can probably do that.
Yeah.
What did you find about how Gen Z are seeing that, and what is your guidance to them?
Yeah, good question. Well, first and foremost, I would say the majority of the Gen Zers that I interfaced with, they did have a level of fear for those entry-level jobs going away. So they're aware this is my new competitor for these entry-level jobs. However, so many of them had already learned the lesson of, I want to control my time and my energy and my revenue. So if you remember in 2020, when we all were sent home for the pandemic, Gen Zers were the greatest group that was laid off because they were new employees. So in terms of numbers, that generation got laid off more often than others. So now we're asking these Gen Zers, be loyal, be loyal. And they're going, well, Bob, you weren't really loyal to me back in 2020. So why would you expect that in return? So what they're often doing, Dov, is they're choosing to join the gig economy, where they're more in control as an Uber driver or as an entrepreneur over here. In fact, 72% of high school students, at least in North America, want to be an entrepreneur, which says to me, I want to start something, not just join something. So if we want them to join us in a venture, I think the best thing we can do is make at least some of your zones at work feel like a startup. Could we have an entrepreneurial zone, call it an intrapreneurship, and we let some Gen Zers serve on that team, and we set aside budget for the untold futures of what they might come up with. So we still have established income and so forth, but it feels like it's fresh and new. This would be very attractive to Gen Z. And I do think they do love the security of a paycheck that they know is coming. Entrepreneurs don't always have that, but I think they're scared of AI just a bit, and they're wanting to seize control of what they can control. But if we can create a place for them where we say, this is something AI won't replace, and we need you here, I think we've got them. I think we'll keep them, in fact.
Yeah, I did a special report on Gen Z. I think you might know that. And in there, I said, if you want to keep Gen Z, you better follow the idea of creating a skunk works for their ideas.
Yeah, that's right.
It's the same thing as you're just saying, like create an environment where it may not be profitable, but your idea of it is that they have a freedom of expression, that you allocate a certain amount of hours every month that they can go do, and they're getting paid.
Yeah.
They get to play their ideas. But you know what? This is not new. This is way before AI. So for instance, Procter & Gamble did that for years and years and years, and they owned everything that was invented,
yeah,
and they bought it from you for a dollar. Those days have changed. I'll admit that that's not the way it should go anymore. But the idea was that people were willing to give up their ideas for a dollar because they got to express, they got to have creativity, they got to do something that had meaning to them.
Yeah.
Now you have to look at Gen Z and even younger millennials and say, that's what they want. And if they're going to be loyal to us, we've got to be loyal to their creativity, to that need for expression.
I agree wholeheartedly. Couldn't have said it better.
So in the book, you talk about 9 strategies to turn these landmines into gold mines. That's how you phrase it in the book. I want to start here by just sort of going into them or sort of outlining them. And then we can maybe pick a couple in part 2 of the show and talk about what some of them are. So can you give us a quick overview of them?
Yeah. So the 9 strategies were birthed out of my research with Gen Zers on the things that made them stay and made them go. So what was it when you left a company that made you go? And what was it if you stayed, what made you stay? So the first one was the onboarding and interview process. I don't know if our listeners know this or your listeners know this, Dov, but many Gen Zers, in fact, I think it's the majority, make up their mind whether they're going to stay on day 1. Now, is that fair? No, it's not fair. They could have a bad day and it's not a fair judgment. But very rapidly, they're saying, I don't think these are my people. I don't think these are my people. So I think the interview process, we not only need to be sharing with them our preferences, expectations, requirements, etc., I think we need to be asking. I have an acronym, PERKS. Ask them what their preferences are. What would they wish were true about this workplace? What are their expectations? There's a lot of conflict between the expectation a 22-year-old has that has no work experience at all. All they've done is school. They may come in with very, very weird expectations. I just talked to an HR executive that said, he interviewed a Gen Zer and she said, well, shouldn't I get extra pay because I have to come into the office a few days a week instead of work from home? And he had to explain, oh no, coming into the office is actually normal prior to the pandemic. She didn't know that. So, wow. You know, that's not, she's not dumb. It's just, she didn't know.
But again, it's context, right?
Yes.
She has no context for that. So why would she think that?
Yeah, exactly. Requirements is a big one. I believe that oftentimes these Gen Zers come in with audacious demands that you do this for the community or do that. And if you can, better to have the conversation now. And if you can't, better to have the conversation now. You don't want this to turn into 1 year later, they're bad mouthing all the leadership of the organization because you didn't do something that you had no idea they wanted. So my point is, I think those conversations need to go both ways at the interview. And then we need to make sure that their first week is unforgettable. And we can talk more about that in the next show, but there are companies that make their first week unforgettable and they fall in love, not only with their leader, but with their teammates and the organization.
And before we finish up part one of the show, what's K?
Oh, K is the keys to their heart. I think too often we just know them as work people between 8 and 5. I think it's good to know the keys to their heart. When I walk down the hall, I want to know that Molly loves softball and Cam loves Michigan football or whatever it is. But I want to have a relationship that's beyond the workplace. And then the letter S in PERKS, sometimes we only talk about this in the interview, but the salary that they would expect or require. But those are fundamentals that could be added with no trouble, but really gets you into who they are and what they are really looking for.
That's really great. I love that acronym, and I think it lays it out really cleanly for any of us to understand. In part two, I want to talk about one or two of those. We can pick them out and go a little more in depth. I want to talk about the values that are driving Gen Z, because these are dramatically different and in many ways counter to what employers are looking for. And how do we cross that divide?
Yeah, good. Excellent.
Before we do that, I want to make sure that everybody can find out more about you, about your organization, and of course, about your wonderful new book. So please tell everybody where they can find out more.
Thank you, Dov. Well, if you're listening and the book sounds intriguing to you, I really wanted it to be a guidebook or a handbook on really leading Gen Z well. So the simplest way, you could go to the site, thefuturebeginswithz.com, thefuturebeginswithz.com. You can pre-order the book now. The book will be out when we launch this podcast. So you can, of course, go to Amazon, go to Maxwell Leadership to get the book. But I'm hoping it's helpful. And then, of course, you can also find it at timelmore.com as well.
Beautiful. And we'll make sure that, of course, all those links are published in the show notes. So if for some reason you didn't catch them, don't worry about it. Just scroll through the show notes and they'll be right there. We're going to be back for more of this delicious conversation with the prolific Tim Elmore, master of generations. And we're going to be back with a little bit more. So stay curious, my friends. Stay curious. We'll see you in the next click. Welcome back to our delicious conversation with Dr. Tim Elmore. He's the founder of Growing Leaders. He is the author of over 35 books. He's appeared on the Wall Street Journal, the Washington Post, USA Today, Psychology Today, and every media outlet you can possibly think of. He's written books on the 8 paradoxes of great leadership, a new kind of diversity, making different generations in your team a competitive advantage. And his latest book is The Future Begins with Z. 9 strategies for leading Generation Z as they upset the workplace. I love that. We've had a fabulous conversation before about really understanding a lot of the biases that we are applying to these young generation, talking about some of the challenges they're facing and how we have got to really do a better job of getting beyond our own biases to help them really become great employees for us. And at the end of part one of the show, we talked about these nine ways of dealing with these nine strategies, and Tim sort of outlined them, and we're going to dive into a couple of them now so that you can take them away, so that you can do something with them, and really in a very practical sense, because all this is nice if it's a theory, but that doesn't make much difference. So Tim, I want you to just pick one of those for now so we can take a bit of a deep dive.
Yeah, sure. Well, I'm looking at the book right now, and I think it might be fun to talk about critical conversations, how to offer feedback to a Gen Z team member that may have come in perhaps appearing a little fragile, maybe not quite ready for the hard feedback that supervisors must give their team members to improve.
That's a great place for us to start, because I think there is certainly a generalized bias, but maybe a justified bias around this fragility. Let's put things in context. I grew up in the 60s and 70s. I played on playgrounds where the concrete was on the floor, and if you came off and you scraped your knee, it was fine. And if you banged your head, it was okay. And you drank from the hose and all those kinds of things. And kids are a lot more protected now. And I think that's done a lot of psychological damage to resilience and the trophies you get for showing up as opposed to actually doing anything. So they do appear to be much more fragile, and that's irritating as all heck for even a Gen X or even a boomer leader.
Yeah.
I know leaders who say to me, I don't even know how to begin this conversation.
Yeah.
So walk us through, like, how do we even step into that? Because I know so many leaders are like, oh my God, I don't want to be this person's therapist, and I don't want to deal with the snot and the bubbles. So where do we go?
Thank you for being so scientific in your language there.
I like to be very scientific about these things.
No, I hear what you just described everywhere I go, from New York to California in the U.S. And I need to remind myself, as much as them, if they're fragile, it's often because we raise them that way. It wasn't all the parents, but I think we did a much better job protecting than preparing them for the workplace.
As Larry Wingate said, your kids are your own damn fault.
Yeah, that's right. Exactly. Once again, very scientific language there.
Exactly.
No, but it's very, very true. So I'm not excusing them. I'm explaining them. They do come in a little fragile. In fact, I've had my own share of young team members that feel like they've been attacked when the only thing their department head did was offer some corrective feedback to get them better. And oh my gosh, one thing I've seen, Dov, is we all know that we need psychologically safe workplaces, but that term is now being weaponized.
Yes.
I don't even know if they're aware of it, but a supervisor will share some feedback to get them better. And, oh, I feel like this isn't psychologically safe. If you're going to stay on the team, you got to get better. So that's sad, because I think they might have learned that, I don't know where, but maybe in college where everything got canceled and the answer was an external change, not an internal change. You know what I'm saying?
I do.
So anyway, all that said, I think they may come to us needing to toughen up, but I think we can do it in a very human sort of way where we can say the hard thing, but we do it by building a bridge, not from our badge. I don't mean to be cliche, but I think they're longing for us to build a relationship with them. You've probably heard the phrase, you got to connect before you correct. So there's another acronym. I love them because they help me remember things. I learned this the hard way as I started meeting with our 20-somethings, and I kept getting the same, you're attacking me, you're attacking me. So here's my acronym. It's the word ALEG, A-L-E-G. Just like we said for years and years and years, this is the leg you got to stand on. Mm-hmm. So the letter A reminds me I need to ask first. I don't need to tell them what they did wrong like I want to. I need to start by asking, what was your thought process when you made that decision? Or something like that, that lets them know you're inquiring. You're not starting with suspicion. You're beginning with belief, but you don't understand what they did. I believe when we ask a young team member a question, they feel valued. They generally feel a power gap between the boss and them. And I think we can bridge that power gap when we begin to ask them questions in the right tone. Not, what were you thinking? That's not a legitimate question.
Come on.
Yeah, that's, I know. I'm being worked out.
No, we should try that. Let's just scream at them. What were you thinking?
Yeah, they always get better.
Yeah, that always makes everybody safe.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. So the letter A is ask, they feel valued. The letter L is listen, and they feel heard. The number one response I got from my focus groups was they want to have a voice at work. and not wait 7 years or 8 years like Colin Webb or whatever. So when I'm listening to them, and by the way, it does little good to ask a question if I'm not willing to do the work of actually listening, they feel heard. The letter E is empathize. This is something, Dov, I want to hear your thought on this as a male, but I had to learn to do this, to really express I'm empathizing with them, to learn to say things like, oh my gosh, I had no idea that happened, or I bet that made you feel awful when that happened. Those kinds of things. Choose your language, but I think we need to relay to them, I'm getting it. I'm really getting it. When we empathize, they feel understood. Now think about the sequence so far. Maybe this has taken 10 minutes. I don't know. But ask, they feel valued. Listen, they feel heard. Empathize, they feel understood. Now I've earned my right to do the letter G, which is what I wanted to do from the beginning, which is to guide them. Mm-hmm. But I did it through a bridge, not a badge again. I don't know if that's a solve all, but for fragile people, old or young, who are really struggling to, do you even believe in me? Are you going to fire me? Should I fear for my job? If I can come in that way, I've really earned my right to say some hard things that may need to be said, but I've done it through relationship.
I love the acronym, and I think it's good guidance. The pushback is this, is because of that, quote, fragility.
Yeah.
There is a phobic response to conflict.
Yes.
And what I mean by that is not only to receiving anything, but to having anything. So what you get from a lot of these people is, no, everything's great. Everything's fine. And it's not. Meanwhile, they're talking to their friends about how my boss is an asshole.
You know,
when your boss is maybe not really an asshole, he's actually just trying to give you some decent feedback.
Yeah.
But because you're so afraid of bloody conflict.
Yes.
Like, so this is where I'm talking about where the senior leader feels stuck because it's like, I can see something's off with this person. I ask him how everything is. Oh, everything's great. Oh, how's your supervisor? Oh, she's wonderful. He's wonderful. They're great. No problem. And meanwhile, you have heard from another team member.
Yeah.
There's a horrible thing going on. You can't fix the cultural issue if nobody's willing to face conflict. How do we deal with that? I know I'm asking a tough question. I apologize.
You are. In fact, it deserves a 1 hour response. I'm going to try to do it in a minute here. I believe for us, it started with a conversation first with a leadership team and then with a whole team about candor. Everybody agrees we want candor. Nobody goes, no, let's lie to each other. So we need to get over the nice part. We're just being nice to each other and welcome candor in a psychologically safe place. But psychologically safe doesn't mean you never have hard conversations. In fact, just the opposite. It means we do have those hard conversations without a fear of being judged or immediately fired on the spot or whatever like that. So conversation with the leadership team, make sure you're on the same page with this candor thing, then the whole team. Now, at least we've established the framework for some honest conversations. We need to make sure, though, to explain, I think, this is my opinion, psychological safety. Remember, I mentioned the story a minute ago, I'm being attacked. No, you're not. So we need to explain what it really is. I think it's marvelous when it's practiced well. So that's where I would begin, but you're absolutely right. I think there's conflict that we run from. Sometimes supervisors or leaders do the same running. And I think the best places are not afraid to have the hard conversation and come out better for it and improved for it in the end.
Well, you introduced me to Jeff Hanscher and his book around firm feedback. And
It's
a fabulous guide around that. And it's an important guide around that. If you didn't hear that show, go back and listen to it. It's really good. And it's a great book. But I think you brought up something really important, this weaponization of this idea of a psychologically safe space.
Yeah.
And one of the things that I recommend with the companies I work with is that it must be defined by everybody.
Yes.
And so how do you do that? Well, you do it anonymously. Everybody gets to write up what it is. And then I, in this case, because I'm the consultant, but I will go through that and I will break it down and go, it doesn't cover everybody, but this takes in the mass of what it is. But it also is kind of like, these are the four commandments of a safe space, but these are the four anti-commandments. So you don't get to say, oh, it's not a safe place because you got some feedback. It's like, no, that's called feedback. If you don't like it, bugger off. Go somewhere else where they'll powder your nose and pat your bottom and tell you everything's wonderful. That's different than, so the question becomes, do you want to grow?
Yes.
And everybody says yes in the interview.
Yeah.
We ask in every interview, do you want to grow? And all millennials and all Gen Z will say yes. They'll all say yes. So you say, now tell me what that means.
Yeah.
And they go, well, I want to rise through the ranks. I want to blah, blah, blah. Tell me what it means to grow. Well, then I would get to the place that I would learn more. Yes, but what does it mean to grow? And then they start thinking about it and you go,
yeah.
To grow, here's my definition. This is the one I give them. My definition is I've learned more from my mistakes than I have from my successes.
Yeah.
And I've learned more from recognizing those, not just making them.
Yeah.
And by the way, I'm completely blind to the mistakes I make. So I need guides and mentors and people who can say, did you do this? Yes. Tell me why you did this and tell me how it maybe didn't work out. And then I go, oh my God, I was an idiot. Thank you.
Yeah.
And then they go, oh, and that's part of our definition of creating a psychologically safe space is growth through feedback. But understanding that's what defines the growth.
Absolutely. In fact, Amy Edmondson was the first person that really popularized the term psychological safety. She would agree wholeheartedly. She longs for people at her organization to grow. And the only way we're going to do it is the friction. There's no growth in the comfort zone. There's no comfort in the growth zone. So we've got to be able to make a decision. We're going to be uncomfortable as we do this. But it's actually good in the end. And maybe Gen Z has not seen that yet in a classroom or in the family room from mama who tells them they're awesome for putting the fork in the dishwasher. It may need to come for the first time at a workplace. I just thought of one more thing, though, Dov, if you don't mind my interjecting real quick. There's one of the chapters of the book, I talk about the fact that every Gen Zer coming in is young, by definition, the newest generation of worker, and they're having this inward struggle that we all have when we're young. And the two pulls we feel in our heart are, I want to be me, and I want to belong. I want to be me, and I want to belong. So listeners, think about this. When you were young, I want to be me. I want to have a nose ring, purple hair, whatever it means. I don't know what it meant to all of you, but we do have this feeling of, I am myself.
By the way, just pause. If you are just listening and you're not watching the video, you probably should know that as I'm speaking to Tim, his hair is half pink and half purple and has two nose rings.
You need to watch the video. It's really good.
You watch the video.
And the nose ring, oh my gosh. No, but you know what I'm saying. I felt that starting, I'm not going to compromise for the man or the establishment or whatever. But we have this equal tug of, I want to be part of a community. I want to belong. And that fight will happen differently based on the temperament of the person and the age.
Yes.
I watched my own two children as they took jobs. I want to be me. I want to belong. Now, I love what you've written about belonging, and here's why.
Thank you.
You've talked about the difference between fitting in and belonging. And if I can just echo my take on that concept.
Please.
Gen Z hates the idea of just fitting in. In fact, to them, it means I don't have the purple, I don't have the nose ring, whatever, but I have to squeeze a square peg in a round hole.
Absolutely.
Belonging is, I am fully who I am, but I am who I am for the purpose of a larger whole, for a team.
Yes.
And I'm a piece of that puzzle. I think we can't do one or the other. It's got to be both. And maybe good supervisors help them wrestle that down, that I want to be me and I want to belong. Hopefully, as they mature, they see how important belonging really is. Because I think we were meant for community, and workplace can be one of those communities.
I think the workplace not only can be one of those communities, but as I wrote about in the book, I think that it's now on us as business leaders, because in a post-COVID world, the bowling club has gone away. The bridge club has gone away.
Yeah.
I'm not a Christian, but I have many Christian friends who don't go to church in a physical place. They go online.
Yeah.
So a lot of the community things have gone away. And so part of when I'm working with a company, I'll say, you're trying to get people to come back to work and they're resisting, right? And they go, yeah.
Yeah.
I go, here's what I want you to do. And they go, what? I said, I want you to make sure that you're really monitoring that they're doing the work while they're at home. And they go, yeah. And I go, and then I want you to give them 2 days a month to come into the office and not work.
Wow.
And pay them. And they go,
yeah.
What do you mean? I go, so that it's a community, so they can have all those water cooler conversations. They can have those innovative ideas. You can set up little workshops where people are learning stuff together and they're growing together. It's a community time where they come in and they'll bump into Tim or they'll bump into Fred or they'll bump into Susan or they'll bump into Betty and they have these conversations. Now I'm here for my community so that when I go away and I'm working from home, I'm part of a community. Now I want to come in. And sure, I might want to stick around a bit longer and do some work too, but I don't have to work while I'm there. I'm actually there to hang out with my people. And that's what we've missed, because human beings are tribal and we've forgotten that.
Yes.
And we're dealing with that in a post-pandemic world in a major global sense. As I said, it's part of that metro crisis.
Yeah, you're spot on. In fact, the data set I looked at, Gen Z of all the four major generations at work was the number one that wanted to come in because they hadn't built social capital yet. They hadn't found that community. Boomer said, I've already built my community. I'm done here. I'm in my pajamas now. So we need to honor that. And I believe you're right on. Let's be together. I love the idea of a day or two per month where they're just there with people. That's brilliant.
Thank you.
And I think it's attractive to Gen Z for sure.
I think it's very attractive to them because, like I said, they're not there because you told me to be. I'm here because I want to be. And I can still go in and work if I want to. But this is my community. One of the things about Gen Z, I know this from the research, is that they want to work with friends.
Yes, they do.
They want to work at a place that they really like. And they will tell their friends, it's great here. Because they want to hang out with their friends. In our generation, it was like, go to work, get a job. I don't really want to bother with you. I want to get my job done and go home. My community's not at work.
Yeah.
That's very different for even millennials and certainly Gen Z.
No doubt about it. Yeah. So this is a new way of thinking, leaders listening, a new way of thinking where we create not just fellowship, but we create an environment where we're getting work done. If I can say this, we're having fun doing it. It's a joy to be here collaborating with my friends, and we're getting to the goal.
In the book, you talk about helping them with their mental health. We've been around that, but can you go a little bit further with where you go in the book with that?
Absolutely. So it's clearly an issue that some, perhaps, as leaders might go, are you kidding me? I'm not their therapist, like you had alluded to earlier. But I think we need to realize that mental health problems have been normalized now. It's not just for that at-risk young person over there that grew up in poverty. It's affluent and middle-class Americans that as Gen Zers come into work, maybe for the first time working full-time, and they're anxious, and they're certainly afraid that they will not be respected, and they won't have the social status they really want. So I do talk about five solutions in that chapter. I'll go through just a few of them.
Please.
I think we need to address the issue in a conversation and say, listen, I know that many young professionals are struggling with this. How are you doing? How are you doing? That alone will go a long way for some of these Gen Zers. But then secondly, I think we need, especially if we're leaders, need to offer them a sense of margin in their day. Part of our anxiety is that we are cramming them so full. And in between of the tasks, we've got social media coming at us, 10,000 messages a day when you count social media and billboards and email and everything else. So creating margin, some space to think. And like you said, maybe just a visit with another team member. That's huge. Mindfulness. That's a big deal. Helping them to focus and breathe and not try to think about 17 things at once, but to focus on one. Maybe if it's just for a few minutes. Another one is movement. And I know sometimes this isn't possible at work, but part of the reason anxiety is high is we're sedentary. We're just sitting all day long. So if we can find spaces, there's a group at our office. I was a part of this today where we walked around our building several times just to walk about a mile or two. We're talking, we're visiting, we're even talking about some work projects, but we're moving. I tell you what, the endorphins are flowing and it's just better for our mental health. And then the last M, notice these all start with M, is management. Talk to them about how they're managing their depression or their anxiety. And maybe part of the answer is seeing a great counselor. And maybe there's some medication that's needed. I don't know. I don't make that a first resort, but it might be a resort. But I think we need to address it consciously and intentionally, like I've said. And in that chapter, I try to lay out a game plan to do just that.
That's really wonderful and important. When I think about this, very often a friend will say to me, how do I get my kid to talk to me?
Yeah, yeah.
I can't get my kid to talk to me. And it's not much different than a boss, a leader saying to me, how do I get my people to talk to me?
It's true.
The answer is something called bipedal trance. And people go, what's bipedal trance? So if you want to get your kid to talk to you and you sit eyeball to eyeball with them, they won't do it.
Yeah.
So how do you do it? Well, actually, when you walk, you swing your arms and you swing your legs. That puts you into a trance state, and people will open up in a trance state. So walking side by side, as you're talking about walking around the building, people will open up because they don't have to look you in the eye while they do it.
Yeah.
And they will start to open up. Now, by the way, there are many very good coaches who are now doing this with senior leaders.
Interesting.
Because of their own bullshit guards, right? You and I deal with very high profile leaders. And oftentimes I sit in front of them, like, well, I'm fine, everything's great. And I go, well, let's go for a walk. And we go for a walk, and suddenly it's like, well, yeah, okay, I'm dealing with it. Okay.
Isn't that something?
Because that guard goes out of the way. So this idea of walking together is very good. And all my leaders, the people who are under them, they walk them.
I love it.
They were walking meetings with everybody. For that reason, they'll open up. So that's a really great strategy and important. You've got to get people to open up about that.
No doubt.
Let's go back a little bit, because there is something that I mentioned at the beginning of this, which is thousands of Gen Zs around the world have taken something called the Values Bridge. What that research has shown is that Gen Z's top three value, number one, eudaimonia. That's self-care, the stuff that feels good. It's their highest value. Their second highest value is being heard, being seen, and having, quote, creative expression, which you've talked about. And the third one came up in the first story you talked about, which is helping others. They want to help others. However, the employer very often is not interested in eudaimonia. I don't give a shit about you feeling good. I care about you doing the job. So that's a major problem for them trying to come into the workforce. And then you want creative expression. You want your voice to be heard, but you haven't really earned it because all you've been to is school and you don't really have any experience in the world or in this world, whatever this world is, our industry. A lot of what we've talked about, you and I, today is about educating senior leaders in dealing with Gen Z. But I think we have to go the other way too, which is if you're a Gen Z listening to this, let's help those people understand what they're dealing with too. Because you've got these three highest values that do not match the workforce.
Yeah.
Or the employing workforce.
No, you're spot on. You know, because we've talked about this before, Dov, I've created resources for the emerging generation of leaders called Habitudes. Habitudes are images that form leadership habits and attitudes. I did one complete book just for young professionals. It's Habitudes for Young Professionals. But the imagery or the metaphors are all conversation starters about these fundamentals. So one of them is coffee step. So it's based on a story. Carrie was a young intern, gosh, a couple of decades ago, and she was a set of seven interns. And we asked Carrie to get the coffee for the executive team. She told me later, I was wondering at that time, did you ask me because I'm a female and none of the guys would do it? Or did you not realize I had a degree from Kansas State University? You know, she had all these ego reasons on why she shouldn't do it. But she said, Tim, I'm so glad I just sucked it up and I got the coffee. Because she said, I learned as I got the coffee, I started meeting the executive team. Next thing I know, they're learning about me, not just me about them. Next thing I know, that I'm sitting down at the table. They have some questions for me. She said the coffee step just opened up doors for me at that place. So what I always tell young professionals, early tasks are rarely about talent. They're more about trust. Can I trust you to be faithful, to execute the little things that I ask you to do? I know you're talented. I know you went to Kansas State. Do the little thing. That's a hard lesson to learn because we all want to say to the boss, do you realize I could write papers here? But I think that's important to learn. I needed to learn that. I worked for John Maxwell right out of college, and he asked me to do some dumb things. I'm so glad I didn't say, that's a dumb thing. I just swallowed hard and I did it. And he kept promoting me and promoting me and promoting me. So anyway, that would be one. Another one is crockpots and microwaves. Most young professionals want their career to be fast. I'm going to move up. I'll be VP by 27, six-digit salary, et cetera. And I say, you know, the difference between crockpots and microwaves, you put food in both, but food that comes out of a microwave, you put a hot dog in there, a minute later, it's awful. And, you know, it was fast, but it's awful. You put a nice stew in that slow cooker, man, it's there for hours. Boy, does it taste good. I say, just know your career's in a crockpot, not a microwave. Let it simmer. Be faithful. Do what you know to do. You'll get more if you do. And I think if I stop thinking I'm falling behind, if I'm 26 and I'm not at this status or whatever, behind what? What are you behind? I don't know what you're behind, but you've got this invisible criteria for success that we probably need to lose. I'll stop there, but some of those conversation starters are what we need to have with the Gen Zers, I think.
What you just said there is so, so vitally needed, because I think that sometimes these young people appear arrogant because they're ignorant, not because they're arrogant. They're just ignorant. They just don't understand. And part of that is not their fault. It's a social conditioning of, hey, I'm 23 and I make $1 million a month online. And look at my Ferrari and look at my Bugatti and look at my Dingleberry, whatever it is.
Yeah.
And it sets up these crazy expectations. And that's fine if you want to go down that path and you want to try doing that. All the best to you.
Yeah.
It's probably not going to work out the way you think it is, but that's okay. But if you're in a company, I think that you've got to earn some value.
Yes.
In order to give some value.
Yeah.
You've got to earn that position. You've got to earn the right. And it doesn't mean you're not brilliant.
Yes.
But it means earn the right to say, not here's what you should do. Can I give some input?
Yes. Yes.
Because I think that most good leaders, and believe me, I understand there's a lot of shitty leaders, but I think that most good leaders, when you say, can I give some input? Most good leaders will go, sure, let me hear it.
Absolutely.
And worse, they'll say, let me think about it. And you go, okay. And if you're smart, you go, okay, when can I come back to you and we can further the conversation? Don't just leave it because they say, well, get back to you. They're busy. They're going to forget. Not because they're ignorant of you. They just forget. So you say, when can I come back to you? And they go, well, come back to me on Friday. We'll talk about it Friday afternoon. We'll go for a coffee. We'll walk. Fantastic.
Yes.
Now you're building up that esteem in yourself and the value that you're bringing to the organization. So the person can come back to you and go, you know, it's a great idea, but it doesn't work here because of this. And you go, oh, yeah, I never thought about that. I wouldn't know that.
Right. They didn't know. Yeah. No, I think what you're saying is spot on. I'm sorry. I cut you off. Go ahead.
It's absolutely great because I think it's this important factor of understanding for us as leaders that sometimes arrogance is ignorance disguised.
Yes, that's so true. In fact, I think this is anecdotal, but I think most of the time they don't mean to come across cocky or arrogant or whatever. They just, you know, have the smartphone where you watch 17 YouTube videos and they think they know, and they do know something.
Of course.
But I think it can come across wrong and they're not even aware that it does. So what I learned in those situations, I need to lead them with high expectations and high belief. Those are cousins, but not twins.
Right.
So high expectation. I really expect a lot of you, Jessica or Josh, and that's because I know you. So I'm expecting a lot. High belief feels good. You believe in me. Now think about it for just a minute. You need both of these. High belief without high expectation feels hollow. You say you believe in me, but you don't really expect much. High expectation without high belief feels harsh. You expect a lot, but you never once said, you actually believe I can do this. You put those together, you're a better dad. You're a better grandfather, Dove. You're a better boss. It's almost a magical set of twins that if you put them together, you just get great performance from those young professionals who are seeking that affirmation from their leader.
That is a fantastic place for us to finish. That was so great. Thank you, Tim, for a phenomenal conversation that is so absolutely timely and needed. And I really appreciate what you've laid out throughout the show and in the book. And I highly recommend grab a hold of the book. With that, I want to make sure that people can find you and find out about the book and where to get the book, all those kinds of things. Please give everybody the information.
Okay, sure. On my website, you can find the book and everything else. Lots of free stuff too, timelmore.com. But the book itself is a page of that site, and it's the book's title, TheFutureBeginsWithZ.com. TheFutureBeginsWithZ.com. And there's stuff to download, and you can pick up the book. And you can also get it on Amazon, wherever you buy books. But grab this book. I'm on a war path to help older generations connect with that younger generation. And Dov, can I close with a statement? One of the statements I put early in the book, I love, and it's not even mine. It's Teresa, a friend of mine. She told me, Generation Z is the sandpaper on my leadership I did not know I needed. They're going to make us better leaders if we'll let them.
I really like that. That's very good. Thank you, Tim. I hope you'll stay with us to the end. And for you, dear listener, remember, those who control the meaning for the tribe control the movement of the tribe. Leaders committed to positively shaping the political and business landscape know that they have got to tap into what drives human behavior. I'm Dov Barron. I show businesses, teams, and leaders how to harness the emotional source code of their tribe. Because unified, actualized meaning is the single monolithic difference between mediocrity and greatness for individuals and companies. Remember, we need your help in staying relevant, so please go to wherever it is you tune into the show from. And do us a favor, rate, review, and subscribe to the show. And of course, a big thank you to you for sharing the show with everybody you know. Till next time, stay curious, my friend. stay curious about how Gen Z may be the solution to the problem we think they are. They're not the problem. Maybe we need to re-examine how we're leading them. And maybe they are the sandpaper that's going to take off the rough edges of our leadership. I'm Dov Barron. I'm here to assist you tapping into your deepest meaning to reach that next level of clarity, focus, purpose, and profit in your business, life, and leadership impact. And I am out.